Welcome to Inflection Point Podcast, where our mantra is cultivating change from the inside out. Join your hosts, Anita Russell, Mavis Bauman, and Gail Hunter, as we create a brave space for conversations about racism, personal transformation, and accountability. Conversation provides a means to dive deeply into your thoughts, ideas, and beliefs, and examine what emerges in your words, actions, and behaviors. The show is a journey towards anti-racism by cultivating change within yourself first and then out into the world. Learn to engage in racial dialogue using four tools: courage, conversation, relationship, and accountability. Discover how truth, reconciliation, and healing can emerge from honest and deliberate conversations. Manifest social change right now on Inflection Point Podcast. Well, hello, and thank you so much for joining us for the newest episode of Inflection Point Podcast. I'm your host, Anita Russell, and let's get a quick hello from Mavis and Gail.
Hi, I'm Mavis Bauman.
Hi, I'm Gail Hunter, and welcome.
Excellent. So we have a lot of stuff that we're going to be talking about today, and it's a very thought-provoking topic that we're jumping into. And so if you've been following us for a while, you know sometimes we get into these sort of non-standard types of conversation, and this conversation is definitely one of those. So the topic, the overall topic, is Juneteenth. So we're going to be talking about the holiday Juneteenth. We just celebrated that just a few weeks ago, but we're going to look at it through the lens of being a cause for celebration, but also a very desperate need for education. And so, as you know, if you've been following us, you know we always start off with a question. So the question of the hour is, well, what do you mean free-ish? So if you've been seeing any of the celebratory symbols and motifs around Juneteenth, you probably have seen a couple of images where it said free-ish. So we're gonna kind of dig into what that ish actually means, okay? And I'm gonna start off with a quote, and this quote is from Bryan Stevenson. He's a lawyer, social justice activist, law professor, and founder of the Equal Justice Initiative. This is what he has to say. Slavery didn't end in 1865. It just evolved. It turned into decades of terrorism, violence, and lynching. He goes on to say and kind of explain that the abolition of chattel slavery actually left the door open for slavery to evolve. And here we are, from the time of the Civil War to the 21st century, 2022, and we are still grappling with the issue of slavery and freedom and all of these different concepts. So we're gonna dig into these topics. But first, what I wanna do is kind of set the tone. So as Mavis, Gail, and I were going through this very difficult sequence of events and information, what we discovered is that sometimes it was really hard to just put the pieces together so that it made some kind of sense within the context of what we've been told, what we've been taught over the years. If you go all the way back to elementary school, junior high school, American history, and all of that, we got one sort of romanticized, mythological kind of version of some historical events. And when it comes to you really dissecting the real history and looking at the documents and who was saying what and what was going on at what time, it becomes challenging to kind of break from what we've been socialized to believe into looking at the truth. So Mavis, if you wouldn't mind commenting, so I know that was something that you were kind of going back and forth with. So before we get into, I'm going to explain to them what this whole perspective taking thing is and how that helped us. But if you could just talk a little bit about how it was a struggle for you.
Sure, I'd be happy. When I first heard of the idea of Juneteenth, I grappled with the sense of freedom being celebrated on one day and in Texas. And as we worked through this subject together, I learned that really this celebration had to do specifically with people in Texas, but slavery was ending and changing in various different ways across the South. So observing the end of slavery or celebrating it on Juneteenth is, it works with our minds in that we want one date. This is done. And it just, nothing is done that way. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about an analogy, Anita, you know, like if somebody gets married, that one wedding day is not their marriage. There's a pre-marriage. There's a whole history there. There are things that rise and fall throughout the marriage. It's very complicated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was, even during my family reunion here, I was asking others, you know, do you know who freed the slaves? And everybody, you know, people would say Lincoln. And it just wasn't that simple. And I, as Anita said, had to break my brain to realize what his true sense of this was and his, the importance he placed on the Union. So
Gail, it looks like you wanted to comment also.
Well, it's just, it kind of breaks your brain from based on what you've learned in school, educationally, and then reading through all these different amendments and realities and dates and what priorities really were going on and how it was set up. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, slavery didn't end. Lincoln did not end slavery. And that just is such a myth that we keep passing on. And if anything, he set it up for a different type of slavery. Not he, but the government set it up for a different type of slavery because the main purpose was, as Maida said, is to get the Union back together. I'm very grateful for being able to learn what I've learned and watch some of the videos I've watched and gain more information and understanding. But it's not what I learned in school.
Absolutely. It's not what any of us actually learned in school. So this idea of perspective taking was very challenging because perspective taking is kind of this concept, like people generally think about it as I'm going to walk a mile in your shoes, right? But perspective taking, especially when you're dealing with this type of topic and something that happened so long ago, that is completely out of our experiential range, if you will. And so making that choice to walk in this perspective mindset was a little bit of a challenge. Even for me, it was a challenge. So it's not just about somebody walking in my shoes. It's about somebody kind of walking in my skin, walking in my thoughts.
And in your time, a different time.
My lived experiences and my perceptions of what was happening around me, right? Because my perception, my experience could be holistically different from the person standing next to me. Mm-hmm. And so the challenge was for all of us to kind of take that perspective, that type of perspective, look at all of this. And that perspective taking really, really came to make sense for me as I started reading Octavia Butler's book, Kindred. So I'm just going to read you a brief description of what that book is all about. It's a science fiction knowledge that challenges white hegemony. The novel tells the story of Dana Franklin, a young Black woman in 1976, whose connection to a young white boy named Rufus Whalen allows her to travel back to time. So remember, I said it's a science fiction novel. So it allows her to travel back to the 1800s in Maryland. As she jumps between 1976 and the 1800s, she learns how she and Rufus are connected and how she must survive as an enslaved person in the antebellum South in order to fit in, right? And so it's intended to kind of bring to our minds that we can never forget the sins of the past. And Butler's use of time travel highlights the importance of keeping the past present, because the trauma left behind begins to shape our daily lives, right? So just let that sink in. That's really, really powerful. And so when we first started these conversations, I kept saying, no. You got to remove yourself from your 21st century thinking, the way information is transmitted, the way we learn about things and all of that. You got to take all of that and put it aside and thrust yourself back into 1865 and think about what individuals, particularly the enslaved, were experiencing in that time period, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what we're going to go through, walk through some of that. So I just wanted to set the stage that this is where we were coming from as we were preparing for this conversation. So I'm going to start with something called the Corwin Agreement, right? So this is before that Civil War. Actually, wait, let me make sure I got my stuff right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So all of this a couple months.
Yeah, so this is happening. Lincoln has been elected. The inauguration has happened. Now we're starting to see secession. We're starting to see the formation of the Confederacy. It starts off with seven of the states that secede from the Union, and that would be South Carolina, Mississippi, Florida, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, and Texas. And the trigger was the fall at Fort Sumter. Okay. Then eventually we have Virginia, Arkansas, North Carolina, and Tennessee join the Confederacy. So what is happening is these people are separating themselves from the Union. And they're literally saying, well, we're going to start our own country. We're going to have our own constitution. We're going to set up our own government. We're going to pass our own laws. We're going to pass our own amendments and things like that. And this is what Lincoln is walking into right after his inauguration, right? And so on February 26, 1861, Representative Thomas Corwin of Ohio puts forth an amendment to protect slavery, okay? And this is how it reads. No amendment shall be made to the Constitution. Now, remember, they're referring to the Confederate Constitution, which will authorize or give Congress the power to abolish or interfere within any state with the domestic institutions thereof. Now, everybody who knows even a little bit about history knows that when you hear the phrase domestic institutions, that's just code for slavery. Okay, including that of persons held to labor or service. Again, persons held to labor or service, that's code for enslaved people, okay, by the laws of said state. So essentially, this was a slavery amendment, basically saying we want to continue slavery, want to expand slavery, and all of that. So we're kind of separating ourselves from the Union and we're just going to do our own thing, right? So it passed in the House, it passed in the Senate, and then it went to the states to be ratified. It did not get the full ratification, but the interesting thing about it is that the amendment was kind of, there was no time limit placed on this amendment. So it's interesting to note that as close to our time period, as recently as 1963, let that sink in, 1963, over a century after it was submitted to the states, the legislature of Texas actually considered adopting the Corwin Agreement. So just let that sink in. So again, just understanding that there's a conflict that's going on between the North and the South. And I know like they like to romanticize things and say, no, it really wasn't about slavery. What do you think, Mavis and Gail?
It was.
It was definitely about the issue of slavery.
And the economics associated with slavery. Right. Yeah.
And the whole Corn Amendment was in hopes of getting the South to come back to the Union by offering them that they can have slavery, basically.
Right.
What thing. We will not interfere with the state's decision, the individual state's decision.
I'm a little bit confused on a point. Was it the Constitution of the the Congress of the Confederacy or of the Union? Was if he was trying to get the states
right? That's a good point. So because actually the Cornerstone speech came after that, and it was the Cornerstone speech where it was kind of like, no, we're just going to do our own thing.
Right.
So you're absolutely right, Mavis, and thank you for clearing that up. So it was made to the Constitution under the Union.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense to me. So that they could try and stay part of it, but like you say, do their own thing and maintain slavery, which Lincoln, I don't want to get too much ahead, but he tried to stay neutral on that point so he could bring those states in, right?
His priority, right, was not necessarily getting rid of slavery. It was reconnecting the Union.
It was preserving the Union. So we're going to dig a little bit further in some of the things that Lincoln said that made it very clear that from a presidential leadership perspective and from a military perspective, his intention was to maintain the Union, right? Mm-hmm. So if we move on, so this is what I wanted to add is the Cornerstone speech. So the Corwin Agreement was put forth in February of 1861. So it's not like this is a lot of time. This is like four weeks later.
Right after the inauguration, right?
Right, and so not only that, but 4 weeks later, now we got the Confederacy, right? We're starting to have our own government and all that sort of thing. So in this Cornerstone speech, this was March 21st, 1861, and it was delivered in Savannah, Georgia, by Alexander Stevens, who is the VP of the Confederacy. So, you know, again, making that connection of how quickly this was actually happening, right? Deliver the Cornerstone speech. There was three main things about the Cornerstone speech. Number one, it defended slavery. Number two, it explained these perceived differences between the North and the South. So again, that separation, right? And it also used racial rhetoric in order to show the inferiority of Black people, right? So here's a quick point. Our new government is founded upon exactly the opposite, meaning the Confederate government that they have now founded is founded on something different, right? Its foundations are laid, its cornerstone rests upon the great truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man, that slavery, subordination to the superior race is his natural and normal condition. This, our new government, is the first in the history of the world. Just listen to that. The first in the history of the world that is based on this great physical, philosophical, and moral truth. Mm-hmm. So I think that really drives home even more the point that Mavis brought up, is that the Corwin Agreement was trying to keep things intact. We're going to keep the Union intact, but we'll just, you know, do some things over here to let these states do what they want to do. But the Confederacy was just like, no, this is what we want. We want to maintain the institution of slavery. I mean, the Cornerstone speech says it directly in no uncertain terms.
They were definitely voting for white supremacy. I mean, that really is what they were. And the whole belief around slavery was, even prior to that, was based on that belief system. I think that's how they justified what they were actually choosing and the horrors of what they were committing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So as you can see, these subjects can really, really get tough, and they can really, really get very sensitive, which is the reason why, in order for individuals who are hearing this stuff for the first time, you have to really be willing to put what you think you know aside, mm-hmm. and begin to see that there's something else that I've never even potentially heard about before. Okay. So we talked about the Corwin Agreement. We talked about the cornerstone speech. So now let's think about, what is the big thing that everybody, when everybody thinks about Abraham Lincoln, what is the one big thing that they really kind of focus on?
That he freed the slaves.
Belief is that he freed the slaves, that that's why the Civil War is there, right?
Right, but what is the thing that he wrote? That was the
Emancipation. Yes.
Oh, sorry. Sure, yeah. Emancipation Proclamation.
Yeah.
That is the document that everybody just kind of, that's the document that everybody just kind of thinks of when they think about the abolition of slavery and the connection to Abraham Lincoln and that sort of thing. So I'm going to, so when we get into this part, so let's look at our timeline, because we also have this timeline that we've been following. So the Civil War officially starts on April 12, 1861. So again, if you see these things are happening in relatively short periods of time. Right, the Confederate general, General Beauregard, opened fire on the Union-held Fort Sumter in South Carolina, right? So we got that attack. And then shortly after that, Abraham Lincoln calls for troops to kind of go there to kind of squash this rebellion or this insurrection. And so when you use the word insurrection, we're used to hearing that word today when they're talking about January 6th, but this was also considered to be an insurrection as well. And so that was April 12, 1861. So then the troops are sent in, the Corwin Agreement comes up. Now we're moving into 1863. And the Emancipation Proclamation, right? And so again, everybody kind of looks at the Emancipation Proclamation as this document that said, we're going to abolish slavery. But the Emancipation Proclamation wasn't really about ending slavery. No, it was about saving the Union and punishing the states that had seceded from the Union. So the proclamation declared that all persons held as slaves within the rebellious states are henceforth shall be free. The limitations are it only applied to the states that had seceded from the Union. So we've already talked about that there were 11 states at that time that had decided to separate from the Union. So what about those border states? We had that lengthy conversation about the border states, right? So the border states played an important role as well, because the border states were Virginia, North Carolina, Tennessee, Arkansas. And those were the states that were kind of sandwiched in between the North, the Union, and the Confederate states, right? But the importance of those states are, number one, they border the slaveholding states, but they also border the Union, but they were slaveholding states. But because those slaveholding states remained loyal to the Union, the Emancipation Proclamation didn't affect them.
Right, they were exempt from it.
They were exempt from it. So just think about that.
So that was their reward, so to speak, of they could keep their slaves. And the punishment was that they declared the slaves free in the southern states that had seceded.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So when you look at that information, it's just really easy to begin to understand that Lincoln's intention
political
was to reintegrate the Union. Mm-hmm. It was not necessarily to abolish slavery.
Anita, are you going to read what Lincoln said about his position on slavery?
I am. I'm getting ready to read that right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I think that is so powerful because then you get a look into his mind and what he was trying to do. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. So this is actually a letter that Abraham Lincoln had written to Horace Greeley, who is the editor, who was at that time the editor of the New York Tribune. So this letter was penned on August 22nd, 1862. So this is before the Emancipation Proclamation was actually put into effect, okay? So it says that this is Abraham Lincoln speaking now. My paramount objective in this struggle is to save the Union. And it is not to either save or destroy slavery.
Wow.
If I could save the Union, listen to this. If I could save the Union without freeing any slaves, I would do it. And if I could save it by freeing all the slaves, I would do it. And if I could save it by freeing some and leaving others alone, which is exactly what he's talking about, right? I would also do that. So what I do about slavery and the colored race, I do because I believe it helps to save the Union. And what I forbear because I do not believe it would help save the Union.
That's a mind breaker, a brain breaker.
Right. Definitely a brain breaker.
Right, and that was before the proclamation, Annie.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the thing. Okay, we're at 6:30 now. It's time for us to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to jump back into this conversation and continue it. We may not get to all the subject matter in this one. So if not, we'll just continue it into the next episode. So we'll take a break and we'll be right back.
Choose the new earth on the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each week on Transformation Talk Radio as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. The Cornelia Stephanie Show is your catalyst for anchoring heaven on earth on a global scale. For more information, go to CorneliaStephanie.com.
Do you feel like love is just taking you for a ride? If you struggle to find yourself in a fulfilling romantic relationship, join me, Love Coach Mariah, in my show, Becoming Secure in Love, from push and pull to peace of mind, every second and fourth Wednesday at 6 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Discover the joy of being loved as your true, authentic self. Visit LoveCoachMariah.com for more. That's LoveCoachMariah.com.
Oh, self-care can be so much fun. And it's not just about bubble baths, but instead about prioritizing the wholeness of who you are without it taking a lot of time out of your day. I'm Claudia Sam, your Soul Connection coach, host of the Be Happy Now show. I invite you to put yourself at the top of the to-do list without guilt. Join me in the Soul Connector Circle community. Get daily pocket coaching and support to stay on track. Go to soulconnectorcircle.com and use the discount code RADIO.
Hi, everyone. This is Courtney Cottrell, host of Unapologetically Favorite on Transformation Talk Radio, here to give you some tips on how you can move your life forward if you're feeling stuck by using the GROW model. First, use the letter G to write down the goal that you ultimately want to achieve, whether it's working out 1 hour a day or working towards a promotion at work. Second, using the letter R, think realistically about the roadblock that is currently holding you back from accomplishing your goals. Third, use the letter O. Think about the options or opportunities that will help you in achieving your goal. What can you change in your daily routine that will help you move closer to achieving your goal? Fourth, use the letter W to discover your will and make a true commitment to achieving your goal by writing down a completion date. Once you've reached your goal, celebrate your accomplishment. You are capable of achieving anything you set your mind to. Never give up and keep being unapologetically you.
So while we were on the break, we were kind of digging into this a little bit more. And one of the things that Mavis brought up, particularly Mavis, if you would go ahead and ask that question around the moral, like with Lincoln and the moral versus the constitutional perspective that you had alluded to.
Right. Well, can you pull out the sentence in the Cornerstone speech? I don't have it in front of me, where he speaks to the morality of maintaining slavery.
I don't have the entire speech in front of me.
I think you read it. It was in what you read tonight. But anyway, the question, read it anytime. But the question comes up, or the issue comes up that Lincoln apparently.
I see what you're saying. Yes.
Okay.
That last sentence is what I think you were referring to. This, our new government, is the first in the history of the world, based on the great physical, philosophical, and moral truth.
Moral truth.
The inferiority of Black people. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, how anyone can claim that they have identified the moral truth for purposes of a constitution, aside from, you know, realizing that there's a greater power in this world, is really kind of a shocking. The size of the hubris there is really amazing. And that the matters around trying to manage slavery were not concerned with the humanity, each of us as a human being, that the suffering, the lack of freedom of self-determination for slaves, that is not mentioned in these any of these documents. And so this is what really raises the specter of what have we done here? What is the moral truth here? Certainly the moral truth is not for any one person to have power over the freedom and right to live and breathe of another.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's what makes this so interesting when you really start to pick it apart, when you really start looking at the documents, because you could even take it all the way back to the Declaration of Independence, right? We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, but that was only within the context that we want to be free from British rule.
Right. We
still want to maintain this system over here where we have people enslaved.
Are not free.
Yeah, so that was not an accurate statement, right? It was not authentically accurate when they say all men are created equal. They let women out of it, but they did not mean that. That was not intended.
Right.
All white men are.
It was an accurate statement if you look at it through the lens of white supremacy.
Yes.
But if you look at it through the lens of humanity,
it's not.
That's where the problem comes in. And I'm going to mention that a little bit further when we start talking about Black soldiers now becoming a part of fighting for
course.
Okay. So the Emancipation Proclamation, again, it did not end slavery in the United States. It only applied to states that had seceded from the Union, leaving slavery untouched by the loyal border states, which we just talked about. So here's the other piece of it. And this is where it kind of starts to get into the military strategy of the whole thing, right? The proclamation also announced the acceptance of Black men into the Union Army and the Navy, enabling the liberated to become liberators. So just think about that. Just think about that. You've been enslaved. We're in a civil war. I'm going to give you freedom so you can fight on my side so that we can bring the Union back together. So I'm going to liberate you. So now you will help me to liberate the Union to bring it back together and all of that. So it kind of, in one of our discussions, we were talking about the fact that if we were to put ourselves into the minds and the body and experience and the thoughts of the Black people who are now fighting in the Civil War on the side of the Union, where the Union is talking about using words like freedom and things like that. And if you connect it back to all men are, you know, these, we hold these truths to be self-evident, all men are created equal. So if that's part of the conversation, now you have these Black men that are free. And the idea now, no matter how accurate or inaccurate their assessment was, we're fighting for freedom under the assumption that that freedom is going to apply to me.
Absolute, right?
Yes, definitely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So they looked at freedom in absolute terms.
Right.
Because if you look at the Declaration of Independence and you look at that in absolute terms, it says all men.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more absolute rather than relative. So relatively speaking, well, you're kind of free-ish, but you're not really free because we're going to have all this stuff that kind of controls your behavior. Right. Your labor and all of that. So we need you to fight the war.
Yeah.
But we're not necessarily giving you freedom right. in the right. sense that we were
right.
thinking about freedom. Or even when you think about it today, when you think about a lot of times people, you know, people say, well, you know, you're not slaves anymore. You can walk around. You can go where you want to go for the most part. You could do this. You could do that. But there are still lingering elements. Mm-hmm. For example, mass incarceration.
Anita, can I just interject something about the Black soldiers?
Sure.
I keep thinking, this is on my heart, that these men gave their lives for what they thought would be freedom.
Yes. For every Black person.
Every Black person.
Everyone.
Talk about the ultimate marketing ploy. The damage, the break in trust with the Union, government. I just think of how
they needed more bodies to fight. Because it was one of the bloodiest wars ever.
Right.
And so many people lost their lives. They needed.
Yeah, and then how must those, African Americans who survived feel about that bait and switch.
Right.
We want your strong bodies. We know you're strong, you know?
And I love the way you just use bait and switch, because that's a term that we can relate to. Everybody knows what bait and switch is.
Yeah. And they're just on my heart. I can just see them proudly putting on a uniform.
Yeah.
And saying, I'm game to do this. I want freedom so bad. I'm going to fight for this place.
And one of the things that I also found out, although I didn't really dig as extensively into it, is that such emancipation spanned from 1780 until 1865, but freedom was limited and had to be won through work. So if you go back to, I think it was 1857, and the Dred Scott decision, where Dred Scott and his wife Harriet sued for their freedom because they had lived in one state that was a slaveholding state, and then they moved with their master to a non-slave holding state. So because they lived in a non-slave holding state, their thing was, well, I want my freedom. And they took it to the Supreme Court and they did not lose their case because it was kind of traced back to where you started off in a slave holding state. So it doesn't matter that you live in this state over here, you started off in the slave holding state.
Held them accountable. So they did lose, right?
They did lose.
I read something today that says the worst decision ever by the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. Maybe not today.
Depends on what century you're in, right?
Yeah, it depends.
Right. So the emancipations, and the word, the information that I got, it's talking about the emancipations that kind of span that time period. They all had three common features that when added together, merely free the enslaved in one sense, but re-enslaved them in another sense. And so one of those was the ideology of gradualism. And this is the principle or policy of achieving some goal by little itty bitty baby steps rather than drastic change. Like we just need to take the whole system apart and change it, reconstruct it.
Yeah.
Right? And when you look at the Brown versus the Board of Education, that phrase, all deliberate speed, that's that gradualism. Mm-hmm. Again, it's just built in, right? And again, it's reflective of white supremacy, right? And maintaining that standing. It also views that emancipated people were units of slave owner property. Like every time I see stuff, unit of property.
There was nothing to change that belief system. Nothing, right?
Right, because we're still grappling with it to a great extent.
Yes.
You can
see why and how it was just perpetuated. It wasn't really altered or changed.
Right. And then the third one is freed people had to pay for their freedom. While enslavers had to be paid to allow them to be free.
Like, what's wrong with this picture?
Talk about bait and switch.
Yeah.
Reparations to the slave owners.
Right. Exactly.
To encourage them to let their slaves be free.
Exactly.
Only to then encourage them to have to work for them that goes on in the amendment. It goes on for a very low wage. And they still were enslaved for various reasons.
We haven't even gotten to the 13th Amendment yet.
I know, but I mean, it gets worse.
Exactly.
Absolutely, it gets worse. So we'll cover the 13th Amendment and then we'll probably end up stopping there and then we'll continue in the in the next episode. So the 13th Amendment abolished slavery except as punishment for a crime. So let me get my chronology sheet here. The 13th Amendment, 1865, it was the amendment to the Constitution that provides neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except for as a punishment for crime, except for as punishment for a crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist in the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction, Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. So they left a loophole. So on February 1st, 1865, President Lincoln approved the joint resolution to Congress submitting the proposal to the states for ratification. The number of states required was 75, and they met that number by December 6th of 1865. Okay, so let's just kind of think about the 13th Amendment, because that's where a lot of people kind of put their focus on. Is, you know, this freedom. But then when you go back to the statement that I had read earlier by Brian Stevenson, it's that little phrase. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 words that opened up the door for slavery to simply evolve. Mm-hmm. Right? And so the minute you start associating punishment with the enslaved, now if you look at us in 2021, 2022, where Black people are perceived to be the criminals in the country, we're the ones that commit most of the crimes, that criminality associated with us goes all the way back to the clause that was left in the 13th Amendment, except for punishment as a crime. Because what it did was open up the door. Well, let's just create some crimes.
Right.
Let's just create a crime.
It opened up the door to still control.
Absolutely. And you
just
know what we
control their behavior, their movements, everything.
And yeah, that's where the Black codes come in.
Right.
It's all propaganda. It's all.
It's all now. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So we can't. All right. I get it. We can't just enslave them, but we can criminalize them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you sneeze too loud, you can get arrested.
Mm-hmm. You're standing and talking to your friend.
Walk on the sidewalk.
Right. Right. Exactly. And from the labor perspective, if you don't have a job, you can be arrested. But at the same time, you're trying to get a job with people that used to use your have your labor for free. So what is the incentive for them?
Right. To hire you.
To hire you. Right. Because now you got Black people in the labor pool. You got white people in the labor pool. And so the white people are still getting most of the jobs. And so then you also had introduced the corporatization of slavery, right? What was the name of the company, Mavis, the iron?
I wish I could remember. It was a name I didn't know, but they had slaves on their books listed as livestock.
Yeah.
Livestock, exactly. They were assets.
Right. So they owned. So we had to have the labor here with white people, white men, right? But mm-hmm. then in order for us to maintain our profits, and when you look at your business documents and you have something listed as an asset, then what does that do for your financial situation, right?
Yeah.
But these are people that you have listed.
People who need your assets. And then I also read somewhere then the white people became upset with Black people competing at a lower rate.
Exactly.
Because they wanted just a nickel to be able to live.
Exactly.
They weren't being supported anymore in terms of housing and food. Yeah. Exactly. What were they supposed to do?
Right. The whole system was rigged.
Yeah.
It was just rigged.
And then they loitered talking to each other, and that threw them in jail again.
Right. So now you're in this state, and around all of this time, also you got the Great Migration beginning to happen because there were a lot of people who were leaving, people who were trying to find their relatives, as an example. So you got all of this motion and all of this activity and this movement with people who are formerly enslaved, and they're moving in that system. And the white people are trying to figure out how do we still maintain control?
Yeah.
So how do we do that? We set up the white laws, and because everything is at the state level, mm-hmm. right? So that's why even now you have so many different laws in different states and everything about the same thing, but the law is different in this state versus that state.
Yeah.
It really depends on what the political climate mm-hmm. of that state actually is, not on what is morally right.
Right.
But and what is the political climate or the economic climate as well.
And the political history of that state seems to carry through so strongly. As I was looking at the maps, I commented that it's the you know, political proclivities are pretty much the same as they were 100 years, 150 years ago.
Right.
You know, how recently were blacks and whites allowed to marry? I mean, it was it the 70s or the 60s? I forget, but it wasn't.
Go ask Clarence Thomas.
Go ask. No, thank you. But, you know, in our lifetimes.
Right, exactly, in our lifetime.
Yeah.
And that's what makes some of this stuff so incredibly fascinating.
Yes.
These are things that happened while we were alive.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of this is going on.
While we were alive, our generation.
Right.
So, you know, when you package it discreetly in these like little capsules of time, it's just very easy to not actually see what was really going on.
Yeah.
The bait and switch, the system is rigged, and the system is still rigged. But now you have all of this history that's being revealed, yeah. Right? You got Nicole Hannah-Jones, 1619 right. Project. You got mm-hmm. Ibram Kendi's work, right? With the anti-racism stamp from the beginning mm-hmm. and all of that. And so you got all of that going on, but you still have these forces that are trying to shut all of that down. Now you got book burnings.
Book burning. Mm-hmm.
You got book burnings. Come on now. That just takes me back to Fahrenheit 451, right?
It does. It does. And, you know, the tendency toward reductionism, where, you know, it's not about all these moving pieces over the 5 years we've been discussing, you know, right. from 1860 to 1865. It's Lincoln, you know, wrote the Emancipation Proclamation, freed the slaves, and was assassinated. That's our history.
Right. That's our history. Exactly.
That's it. And so why would we be talking about slavery now? Well, this brings out the whole kaleidoscope of events happening simultaneously and why we today think the way we do.
Absolutely.
You know?
And I want to say something about that. What struck me the most out of reading all of this was how much there was mental manipulation of people
yes.
to believe that Black people were not human or were certainly less than human, and that they were violent or they were whatever, all the different things have been used, they were so set up purposely.
Right.
Purposely.
Right.
That's just propaganda. And
programmed.
That's right. Yeah. Programmed. That's right.
And you know, the real evidence of how that socialization has progressed over the course of, we got about 3 minutes to go. But the thing that makes it so evident of how all of that has been coursing in the background, if you will, was January 6th.
Yes.
Right. All right. that stuff.
Oh, yes.
All that stuff that still goes back to the Civil War.
Right.
I saw one
of the- that we're going to lose, the white neighbor, we're going to lose. I mean,
right.
That's like
right.
over 100 and some years old. I mean, but it's still very much alive.
Right.
And
it's
that's what's sad and that's what's frightening. Right.
Right. I had seen one of the documentaries that we watched recently. I forgot which one it was, but the person that was narrating, if you will, the documentary was having a conversation. I don't remember what city it was, but having a conversation mm-hmm. with a white man who had a Confederate flag. And so mm-hmm. the guy that's the narrator is a Black man. So they're engaged in this.
That was Jeffrey Robinson, I think.
Right, yeah.
Oh, maybe
Jeffrey Robinson and Who Are We? Or Who We Are, something like that. Yes.
Right. You're right. But the thing that really jumped out at me is the white man, how he really, really believed that we were treated like family.
Family.
I know.
And you just look at somebody, but that just goes, so that's generation after generation after generation.
The story was that was actually passed down.
Right, passing it down, socializing, romanticizing the South, mythologizing the South.
Normalizing.
And all of that, and yes. just covering up the truth. Just covering up the truth.
Right.
So we are just about out of time. And so it looks like we're going to have to continue this discussion into the next episode, which will really be good because we have two guests that are definitely coming up over the next couple of months that are going to be talking about discrimination in the military. So it kind of ties into these mm-hmm. soldiers being drafted, if you will, into the Union for the Civil War. So we literally have 60 seconds left. And so for those of you who are listening, we are here. This is Inflection Point Podcast. And we are here every first and third Wednesday of the month, 3 p.m. Pacific time, 6 p.m. Eastern time, right here on TransformationTalkRadio.com. If you want to know any about what it is I do, you can visit my website, theplacetosoar.com. Mavis, Gail, real quick.
Or visit seedabetterlife.org. That's my work.
Or visit omapittsburgh.org. Thank you.
Excellent. So, so when we get together for the next session, we'll have a guest. And she's going to be talking about her experiences in, I think, being a military wife, the mm-hmm. discrimination that she experienced. And then we'll do this follow up to this, and then we'll have the second military conversation in August. So it'll kind of be this continuation for the next three sessions or so. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to Inflection Point Podcast, where our mantra is cultivating change from the inside out. The journey towards anti-racism and social change doesn't stop here. Truth, reconciliation, and healing come from ongoing, open, honest, and deliberate conversations. Continue to dive in and deconstruct your thoughts, ideas, and beliefs as we band together to manifest social change. Tune in to Inflection Point Podcast every first and third Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, here on TransformationTalkRadio.com for more conversations about how we can cultivate change from the inside out.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.